This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
For the month of March, I'm taking a break from recording new episodes so that I can highlight some of the other fantastic podcasts that I've had the privilege of being a guest co-host on. This week, I'll be replaying part of an episode of Moving Panels with host Laramie Wells. As you know, Laramie is a good friend of mine and has been a frequent guest on the 80s Flick Flashback podcast, going all the way back to season one. Laramie created Moving Panels to discuss movies and TV shows based, inspired by, or adapted from the world of comic books, and I was actually his very first guest co-host when he covered Superman the movie. We always have a great time on each other's shows, and this episode was no exception. So get ready to get all botanical as Laramie Wells and I discuss Swamp Thing from 1982 on this special Moving Panels replay episode of the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast.
The comic book legend lives, the Swamp Thing. Once a man, now a monster. Once a creator, now a creature. Once her hero, still her hero. The Swamp Thing. It lives, it loves, and no thing does it better. Rated PG.
Hello, movie viewers and movie lovers. My name is Tim Williams, the creator and host of the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. On each episode, I'm joined by an 80s flick-loving guest co-host to talk about one of the great and sometimes not so great movies from the 1980s. From blockbusters to cult classics to lesser-known treasures we discovered on cable TV or the now-defunct video rental stores from our childhood. No matter which 80s flick we choose for each episode, we have a lot of fun sharing first-time watch memories, discussing our favorite iconic scenes, and even learning some behind-the-scenes stories about the cast and crew along the way. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe and follow 80s Flick Flashback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. And while you're there, leave us a stellar written review and a 5-star rating. You can also support the show by following us on our social media pages. Just search for 80s Flick Flashback on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And don't forget to check out our website, 80sflickflashback.com, as well. If you want to take your support to the next level, you can become a financial partner for less than $10 a month. The link to financially support the podcast is located in our episode show notes. And while you're there, be sure to check out more fun facts and behind-the-scenes trivia we just weren't able to fit into today's episode. Thanks for listening. Now, on with the show.
Yes, 80s movie, and it showed.
Early 80s movie, for sure.
Yes, it was. All right, so before we get into it, I want to ask, what was prior... I know you've now seen the movie... But What was your knowledge prior to prepping for this show to the movie or even the actual comic book?
Well, I remember seeing this movie on cable as a kid, a very young kid. So, and it was funny because when it first started, I was like, I probably not going to remember much about this movie because I didn't have a lot of memories of it, but as it was playing, I was like, oh, I remember this part. Oh, I remember this part. Oh, I remember this part. So I obviously watched it several times, but it's something I have not watched in a very long time. So when you mentioned doing it for this, for your podcast, I was not aware of it being a comic book. Of course, it says it on the credits, but as a kid, I wouldn't have, you know, I didn't pay attention to that. But as I've, you know, gotten older, I think I've known that it was part of it was from a comic. But I didn't read the comic. I don't know much about the comic.
So we're, of course, in our March Madness, where all of March we've devoted to one single topic, and this year it's Swamp Thing. Mm-hmm. Last week, Blake and I talked about the cartoon. Were you familiar with the cartoon?
Yes, I was familiar with it, but I did not watch it because that was like 90s, right, when that came out.
Yeah, it was so like 91, 92.
Yeah, I was not as into animated stuff at that point in my life. I was a little older, like going into high school, so animated stuff wasn't what I was watching.
All right, what about the live-action show that came on USA?
I didn't watch that either. I knew about it, but I didn't watch it, so...
And then, believe it or not, there's a sequel. Any remembrance of the sequel, Return of Swamp Thing?
Yeah, see, I'm going to have to watch that one now because I kept thinking that the Swamp Thing that I watched was actually Swamp Thing 2. Like, in my mind, I kept thinking, like, I've never seen the first Swamp Thing. I've only seen the second one. But then as I started to research, you know, doing an 80s podcast, of course, our research was like, oh, well, if the first one came out in the early 80s, that's probably the one I saw. But for some reason, I must have seen the second one, but I don't have any recollection of it. I probably only saw it like once or twice.
It's also an 80s movie. Came out in 89.
It is.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into some of the background. So the character of Swamp Thing was created by Len Wein and artist Bernie Wrightson. Are you familiar with Len Wein?
The name sounds familiar, but I wouldn't be able to. If it was a trivia question, I would not get it right.
So I think I've said his name on this show before, but I think I said Len Wein.
Okay.
And I think more of my research has discovered it's pronounced Wine. Gotcha. So Len Wein is the guy who not only co-created Swamp Thing, he co-created Wolverine.
Ah, which we've discussed. A lot lately, or you've discussed a lot of Wolverine and X-Men things lately.
Yes. Also, other X-Men. He co-created Nightcrawler, Storm, Colossus. He was the editor for Watchmen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The original Swamp Thing was intended to be kind of just a horror monster, just kind of like this movie portrays, and we'll get into that. It was producer Michael Uslan, however you pronounce his last name, who purchased the rights from DC. Of course, Superman had come out a few years earlier.
Right.
And people were wanting to capitalize on this resurgence of superheroes. And so he purchased the rights for Swamp Thing and Batman. He got Batman, but yet he decided to go with Swamp Thing.
Well... Yeah, I guess I know we're going to get into it, but seeing how the budget kept getting cut for this movie, probably a better idea. They obviously didn't have the money to do Batman the way they wanted to. They didn't do Swamp Thing the way they originally wanted to either. But
I will point out, though, he still held on to the rights, and he is the executive producer on Tim Burton's Batman.
Oh, very nice.
So
smart man.
Yeah, so same dude. I did hear in an interview that... when I say he purchased the rights for both characters, he actually only purchased the rights for Batman. And then he talked DC into just giving him Swamp Thing for free.
Wow. Okay. That worked out well for him.
Yeah. And I mean, they gave him everything. Pretty much the contract read that he had the rights to every character that was introduced in a Swamp Thing comic book.
Wow.
That's pretty awesome.
Which I know you're going to tell us a lot of those characters that came out of Swamp Thing, aren't you?
Yeah, there's not an awful lot in this movie, though, but we'll get into that.
No, well, yeah. Eventually, through the month, you'll be sharing more that came out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, we've already done one in a previous episode. Blake and I did Constantine, and Constantine actually came from Swamp Thing comics.
Wow, so, okay.
And I think it was, I don't have it right here, but I think it was maybe issue 5. So the fifth issue of Swamp Thing, he teams up with Batman.
Yeah, I think I remember we were talking about that last week. Yep.
Yeah. So this movie was released February 19th, 1982. So Valentine's weekend.
It is kind of a love story.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast kind of story there. Now, did you remember or... were you surprised to find out it was written and directed by Wes Craven?
I was. I did not I did not realize that until it popped up. Well, first I saw the written by on the opening credits, and I was like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of cool. And then I saw directed by, I was like, oh, very interesting. So quite a departure from his previous films up until this point.
Yeah, not his first film. He had already done The House on the Left. He had already done The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah. Right.
I think he'd done a couple other movies that I think have been kind of throwaway movies.
Yeah, I think he did one other right before this one that was not necessarily horror, but wasn't very well received either. So,
yeah. Of course, it would be 2 years after this that he would finally break through with A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yep. Which something I read said that he was coming up, he was already beginning the idea of Nightmare on Elm Street while he was making this one, which production seemed like to be its own nightmare for him. So I'm sure that was easy to come up with.
Well, he's also said in interviews that he thought this movie was going to end his career.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, exactly.
So let's be glad he came up with the idea for Nightmare on Elm Street, because I mean, he's Wes Craven now.
Right.
You know, a legend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, may he rest in peace, but he will always be a legend in Hollywood and for movie buffs like you and I.
Yeah.
Love Wes Craven.
Yeah, but I can say, like, as I was watching it, it was like, this is definitely, it has Wes Craven's touch to it. I mean, of course, I wouldn't have realized that watching it as a kid, but having seen so many other Wes Craven films, it definitely fits in his filmography, even if it is a PG, you know, more sci-fi than horror type movie.
Part of me wonders too, and you know, we'll get into this as we're talking about the story, but the bit they did with the stuntman on fire running out of the lab.
Yep.
Like, part of me wonders, like, did he get the idea to do that with Freddy?
Yeah, it's very possible.
In Nightmare on Elm Street, because they did a very similar stunt in Nightmare on Elm Street.
And it was the same stuntman.
Was it?
Yeah, it was.
I didn't discover that. That's awesome. Well,
yeah, and the stuntman said that there was another story, kind of branching off of that, that he was so, that stuntman, like, he just does the fire stunt, but he started doing that as a kid by setting himself on fire next to his pool and you know, jumping in the pool when it got too hot. I was like, okay, that was very dangerous, and we do not condone that activity, but he obviously knew what he was called to do.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw that. I saw that in my research, was that he would just try different chemicals to see how they burned. I mean, I found out it's a 28-second burn.
Yeah.
Which is really impressive, because usually when you see someone catch on fire, a stuntman get caught on fire, it's, you know, 5 seconds.
Right.
And I was
watching for the cuts, you know, like, how, you know, cutting away to a different scene. Like, okay, was it all one? Was that all done in one shot and they recut it? Or was that, okay, go this far and then we'll stop and then we'll set you on fire to go, you know, he made it out the house and then, like, almost to the pier. Then
they cut from a different angle.
Right. Yeah. And so I was like, ooh, I wonder if that was all one continuous, you know, him running out, or if they had to break it up and recut it. Still great. Great stunt work for sure.
Oh, definitely. Did find out, because I'm always curious whether the writer or the director knew about the character prior. Mm-hmm. Found out that Wes Craven was not familiar with the character.
Not at all.
And that he never spoke to Len Wein.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Swamp Thing had just debuted 10 years earlier in 72.
Right.
And of course, Len Wein was still big in DC Comics, or probably Marvel Comics by this point, but still, he didn't reach out to him. And I just kind of go, I kind of wish you would.
Right.
But did find out that Wes did read the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt his story was respectful to the story and the overall theme that the comic book was trying to portray. And we'll, of course, get into whether or not that was true as we get through the episode. But let's go ahead and move into our characters. And we'll start off with Alec Holland, a.k.a. Swamp Thing himself, although played by two different actors. Alec Holland was played by Ray Wise in one of his earlier roles. Yeah. He, of course, would become more famous a few years later in the show Twin Peaks.
Right.
And then, of course, he'd have a pretty stellar career after that. I'm going to throw this out just to see if you remember it. Do you remember the show Reaper? Came on CW?
No.
It only lasted a few seasons before it was canceled.
I've never been a big until like, you know, Arrow and The Flash and those shows kind of got on CW. I wasn't a big CW watcher.
Yeah. Well, in Reaper, he played the devil.
Oh, well, I could see that.
Yeah. And then Swamp Thing, once he becomes Swamp Thing, Swamp Thing was played by stuntman Dick Duroc, who would own this character for for the next 10 years.
Right, right.
That's crazy. I mean, you really break it down. If you want to break down just the number of hours of screen time that Dick Duroc is Swamp Thing, I'd say he's got a rank in the upper echelon of characters.
Right, right.
Because, you know, of course, Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman, I think, are the top two for Professor X and Wolverine. But if you look at this movie, the sequel, the television show, which had, what was like 60 episodes, 70 episodes, something like that.
And, right.
And then there's these, the sequel actually has these PSAs that he made in the 80s. But you put all that together, I mean, this man is one of those rare people who became that character and stuck with that character for this entire time.
Oh, yeah.
So once Holland becomes Dick Duroc, this is when things start getting weird. So I notice I said once Holland becomes Dick Duroc. Once Holland becomes Swamp Thing.
Right. That's what you meant.
Yeah. It is Dick Duroc, but it's not Dick Duroc's voice.
Right. Right.
They used Ray Wise's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That was very evident to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I didn't pick up I didn't pick up on it as much just from initially watching it, but then once I did saw the research and that Wes Craven wanted to switch back and forth between Dick Duroc and Ray Wise, but he actually shot some scenes with both of them and then decided, yeah, it's not going to work with Ray Wise in the suit.
Because they looked too different.
Too different, yeah. Even though they tried to make the mask that he wore somewhat more in Ray Wise's shape, but he does look totally different still. Yeah, so once I read that, I was like, they definitely had to have dubbed the voice, and it was more evident at that point, but not initially.
Yeah, you want to talk about the budget. The fact that they filmed all of the Swamp Thing scenes twice.
Yeah.
And the time that it had to have taken to put that suit on, to put whatever prosthetics had to go on the face for the mask.
Right.
Yeah, that had to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the middle of the swamp in South Carolina.
In the summer.
Yeah.
Humidity and all. Yeah.
Yeah. Movie set in Louisiana, but they filmed in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Tim and I both know living in the South. Woo.
Summers are no joke.
No, humidity alone. But everybody says, Wes Craven said it. I think the director of the sequel even talked about it, that Dick Duroc was a pro. Mm-hmm. And he would never complain.
Right, yeah.
He did everything he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dick Duroc is actually seen in the movie.
Right.
When Adrienne Barbeau's character arrives on the plane, Dick Duroc is the agent who is getting out. That he's getting onto the plane and saying, you know, hey, this is all you now. So you do get to see Dick Duroc without the makeup on.
And now these messages.
Hello, 80s flick lovers. I just want to take a minute and say thanks again for listening to the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. Sadly, we don't have any shout-outs to new buymeacoffee.com members this week, but I want to encourage you, if you haven't already, to support the podcast on a monthly basis through buymeacoffee.com. We have three tiers of support to choose from. You can be a Cult Classic member, which is only $5 a month, a Be Kind, Please Rewind member, which is $10 a month, or you can go big by choosing to be a Box Office Blockbuster member for $15 a month and receive an official 80s Flick Flashback t-shirt. All members on any tier will receive a free logo sticker, so don't miss out. You can also leave a one-time donation for $5 or more if you choose. Just go to our website, 80sflickflashback.com, or the link in the show notes for more details and to start your subscription membership today. We will always offer free episodes and will never put any of our past seasons or episodes behind a paywall. But it does cost money to keep the podcast running. Since the creation of the podcast, I've personally paid monthly for the website, the Zoom account, various movie rentals and streaming subscriptions, marketing tools, and other miscellaneous expenses that pop up from time to time. If you love the show, then please consider being one of our subscription members through Buy Me a Coffee. Every little bit helps and will be greatly appreciated. You can also support the show by buying an official logo t-shirt, sweatshirt, or sticker from our online store. There are multiple styles and colors to choose from, so go check out the selection on our website as well as the link in the show notes. If you've been listening for a while, you know I've been moving away from buying digital movies and going back to buying Blu-rays and DVDs of my favorite movies. If you'd like to help, you can find my Amazon wish list at the link in our show notes. There are movies there priced from $5 to $40, so feel free to purchase one or more. I'll even give you a special thank you on TikTok and Instagram when the movies arrive. Hey, if you love 80s pop music and movie soundtracks as much as I do, you can also find the 80s Flick Flashback Movie Songs Mix playlist on Apple Music. It's full of hit songs like Eye of the Tiger, Flashdance, What a Feeling, and Danger Zone, as well as deeper cuts from the 80s flicks like Lost in the Shadows from The Lost Boys, Only the Young from Vision Quest, and Cool Rider from Grease 2. This would have been my ultimate movie soundtrack mixtape growing up if I could have found a cassette to hold 8 hours worth of songs. So it's perfect for listening to on a fun road trip or if you're just stuck in a cubicle at work. Thanks again for listening. I really do appreciate every one of you, and I'm amazed each week to watch the number of new listeners grow. It's because of you and your support that the 80s Flick Flashback podcast is still going strong. Let's keep the fun going. Now, let's get back to today's show.
So Swamp Thing first appeared in The House of Secrets, number 92, in July of 1971. This was like a horror anthology series that DC had, and he appeared in one issue. We'll get into that a little bit more in the moving panels because I do want to talk about Swamp Thing's origin and how that plays out. But we didn't get the version that we saw in the movie, the whole Alec Holland storyline, until Swamp Thing got his own series in October of 1972, which is when Swamp Thing number one came out. So a little over a year after he was technically first introduced, it was, from what I discovered, is that The House of Secrets number 92 was one of the best-selling DC comics ever. And so that is why they went forward and gave him his own series. So what did you think of, let's just get into this character because there's a lot to talk about here. So let's talk about Alec Holland first. What did you think of Ray Wise's character, his portrayal? What did you think of the character of Alec Holland?
I mean, I liked it. I mean, we don't see as much of him. I mean, of course, the transformation is fairly early in the movie, so you get a little bit of a sense of him as a character. But I mean, definitely the protagonist, definitely, you know, wanting to do good. You know, this accident that happens, you know, is what creates him, which is what transforms him into the Swamp Thing. But he still maintains his moral compass. So I enjoyed him. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I like that they keep him. He's very optimistic about everything. Mm-hmm. He seems to just be happy doing what he's doing. Yeah. And then of course they give him the noble deed of his experiments are supposed to save the world.
Right. Right.
And this bio regenerative formula that he's coming up with will end world hunger And so they make him, you know, a likable guy right off the bat.
Yep.
Which, of course, then will help. Okay. So he then turns into Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the look they decided to go with with this suit. What were your thoughts of this look?
I wasn't a fan of the suit. But, you know, once again, knowing the time frame of the, you know, the time this movie was made, and it's evident pretty early on, even before the suit comes up, that this is not a big budget, you know, property. So I knew it was more for budgetary reasons, but it's a pretty terrible suit. I'm trying to make it not sound as bad, but it's
pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
I got a Creature from the Black Lagoon vibes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Which I don't know if that's something Wes Craven was trying to go for.
Yeah.
If he was kind of going for that classic, you know, universal monster look.
Yeah.
It
seemed very practical because it looked like those like fisherman weighted, you know, boots and, you know, gear that you wear. Like the material looked like it was waterproof. So I'm sure that was very practical. And they just like, hey, with whatever money we have, try to put some, you know, make it look a little bit more like a plant on the outside, put some moss kind of feel on it. And then
they barely did. According to the, I listened to the commentary of Wes Craven. Mm-hmm. The reason why they didn't put an awful lot on it was for continuity, is what he said.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Although in the sequel and the television show, they went with a more, you know, he really looked like a living swamp. You know, he had the leaves and the twigs. And part of me is like, continuity wouldn't really matter because you would expect that he's constantly moving, changing, you know, growing, and all that. This suit, just being kind of a green bodysuit, which you see wrinkles in sometimes when he moves. You see it wrinkle up.
Right.
I think there's even a moment where you see a tear in the suit.
Oh, I missed that, but I don't doubt it.
And then the face, I don't know what the idea was behind giving him those really defined cheekbones.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like they were trying to make the face more like Ray Wise, because Ray Wise does have a very distinctive facial feature. Once again, I don't think they achieved what they were going for, but
clearly not.
That's what I felt it was. But I did know there's a lot of scenes up close where the green makeup doesn't quite make it all the way to the eyes, and you can still see the flesh tone around the eyes, but probably for safety reasons too. You probably don't want that makeup in your eyes.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they could have played with that somewhere. There were still some human aspects of him, and give him some more, you know, a few other places where some of his natural flesh came through. Of course, that's not comic book accurate, but that was my thought anyway.
All right, moving on. Our next main character was Alice Cable, played by Adrian Barbeau, who was on a run at this time. She had done Escape from New York. She had done The Fog.
Right.
Of course, both of those being done by her husband, John Carpenter.
Right.
Who she was still married to at the time when they filmed this, which I just kind of find funny is, could you imagine Wes Craven like calling up John Carpenter and like, hey, I'd like to use your wife for this movie.
Right.
Do you also mind that I film her topless?
Yeah. Which I watched the interview with her on her kind of retrospect. And from her perspective or from her memory, she actually received the script first, and she was not familiar with Wes Craven because she said horror was not her genre, even though she'd been in The Fog. But she said, but John Carpenter was a huge fan of Wes Craven, and he basically told her, you've got to do this. You need to go make this movie with Wes Craven. And she also did say that she did not remember the nude scene in the contract. But obviously she filmed it without any issues.
Yeah. We're going to get into that whole story later.
Right.
Yeah, nope. Very reveal. Even without the nude scene, very revealing outfits throughout. Yeah.
Well, I think she was used to that by that point, because I think any other thing she'd been in.
Well, I know Escape from New York, she kind of is dressed. But in The Fog, I mean, she's just the radio DJ.
Oh, okay. I've never seen The Fog, so.
What? You host an 80s podcast.
I didn't say I've seen every 80s movie, but I love 80s movies, so I will eventually see it. So just edit this part out. It'll be good.
No, we are not, because maybe it'll force you to do the Fog on the 80s flick flashback.
It's on the list. The list is long, but it is distinguished. Okay.
All right. But the character of Alice Cable, although not in the comic books, there is a character named Cable, and I'm not talking about the X-Men character. I'm talking about
I kept thinking every time they call her name, all I can see is Cable from Deadpool.
In the actual Swamp Thing series, there was a character named Matt Cable, and it was just like what her character is. He's a government agent, although in the comic book, he works for Interpol.
Okay.
I think in this movie, they establish she's an FBI agent. I'm not 100%, but I think they establish she's an FBI agent.
Yeah, I remember her being an agent of some kind. I don't remember which entity.
And in the comic, he's just the one that kind of oversees. He's kind of the liaison between the government and the Hollands. And I guess that's what we're to put onto her character as well. But of course, we're not going to have it be Matt Cable, because there's a whole mess of things that go on in the comic book with Matt Cable and Linda Holland and Abby Arcane, which some people also say is who Alice is supposed to be. She's supposed to be a version of Abigail Arcane, Abby Arcane. I didn't see that.
No.
Knowing the character. Now, that's who Heather Locklear would then go on to play in the sequel. She would play Abby Arcane. I didn't see that. I was fine with the Matt Cable connection and just kind of blending Matt Cable and, I would honestly say, Linda Holland, although Linda Holland was a character in this movie, but the comic version of it. So what'd you think of Adrienne Barbeau and her performance? Because this movie was more her than it was Swamp Thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I mean, I think she does well with what she's given. I liked her a little bit more in the beginning, where she's a little bit more assured and, you know, she doesn't take any stuff from anybody. She, you know, she has a nice
confident.
A little confident. She has a good little fight scene with the guy that tries to, you know, take her out in the cabin. But then she, you know, once the Swamp Thing is created, then she just becomes kind of the damsel in distress, which I felt was a little disappointing for her character.
They got to have someone for him to save.
I get it.
Yeah. And I will say this. I found out that she did, I think, 95% of her own stunts.
I believe it.
The only one I could tell was not her is the one that jumps over the stuff outside of the gas station when she's running, and then it does the weird, obviously, stunt cut, and you see somebody jump over, and then she comes up, and then the horrible edit when the gun explodes in her hand. That was a bad edit. I tell you what, though, she had to have hated the humidity, because her hair.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, she
nice
said.
Nice little afro she's sporting.
Yeah, she said in the interview, she was like, she remembered it was like 14-hour days, it was hot, and she said that she did not watch any of the dailies, like, you know, as they were filming. So by the time that she got to see them, she was horrified by the wardrobe, by the makeup, her hair. She hated throughout the whole movie, but once it had been established, she couldn't change it. But she said she was just exhausted making the movie. So she was not very happy with her appearance in the movie either.
And the number of times she goes into the swamp, like knee deep in the swamp. Like, I'm honestly sitting there going, do they have someone that's watching out for like alligators or snakes or anything? Cause
she said the crew would love to find, she said it was not as wild, or didn't have as much wildlife as other swamp areas that she had heard about, but there were still snakes. Like she said, the crew would find snakes and then decide they didn't want to bring them and show them to her. But she said they were more concerned about bacteria. She said anytime they went into the water, they would have to take like antibiotic soaked cotton balls and put them in their ears or their nose. Ugh. And then as soon as they, you know, as soon as they shot it, they came out of the water and they had to wipe them down and rinse them down because so much bacteria and stuff in the swamp. But she said it really wasn't. She said she didn't see any alligators like that. But she said it was not fun. Not fun conditions for sure.
Also reminds me, we've done on your show, mm-hmm. you and I did a Stand By Me.
Yes. On the leeches.
Did they do a leech check?
Yeah. She said she had a hard time sleeping after those days because she would wake up thinking that there was still stuff on her from being in the swamp. So
No.
Yeah.
No, that just makes me shudder.
Yeah, it's like
just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's like, isn't there a sound which actually they looked for sound stages to use instead of doing on location, and the only one that they had that they could afford was the old Creature from the Black Lagoon. The lot, but it was too small.
Too small, yeah. So I heard Wes Craven talk about that. Yeah,
so they had to do it. And they filmed, I think, one of the boat sequences in an actual lake that was in California, not in South Carolina.
Yeah, the big one with the one that seems completely out of place because it was.
Yeah.
Because they test screened the movie or showed the movie to the studio and they go, we need a big action scene. And so, yeah, they just went out and filmed that little bit to put in the middle of the movie.
But yet they cut his big action scene he wanted at the end. We'll probably get to that later, but go ahead.
Let's move on in the characters. So we've got our big bad villain,
mm-hmm.
Arcane. In the comics, his name's Anton Arcane. I don't think they ever say his first name in this movie. They just call him Arcane.
Yeah.
Played by Louis Jourdain,
mm-hmm.
Who, let's hit another great 80s movie, who was the villain, Kamal Khan, in Octopussy.
James Bond.
Yeah. Of course, Louis Jourdain had a huge career before this, you know, movies all the way back into the 50s,
mm-hmm.
you know, huge actor. And they got him for this. So yay them. The character of Arcane actually first appeared in Swamp Thing number 2 back in January of 1973. He was technically teased at the end of the first issue, but he's officially, you know, introduced in the second issue. In the comic, however, he's this old mad scientist slash wizard.
Okay.
It's very, again, that sci-fi kind of element that they were going with, the classic horror story. He has his unmen, which are, you know, they kind of start playing into this towards the end of the movie, his genetically enhanced subjects, mm-hmm. Minions, whatever. He has them actually take Swamp Thing from Louisiana, and they bring him to Arcane's castle that's in Europe somewhere.
Okay.
And he is a, like I said, mad scientist slash wizard. He's obsessed with immortality, which is mm-hmm. something they do with the character in the movie.
Right.
And he says that he can give Alec back his life if he agrees to give him the power of the Swamp Thing,
mm-hmm.
and which Alec agrees to. So they perform this actual like magical spell with this whole cauldron type thing, and it works. Arcane becomes the Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Holland is human again. However, not too long after, Alec finds out that Arcane has a nefarious plan. And so Alec does what he needs to do to break the spell, and he gets back the Swamp Thing powers. And then he goes after Arcane, who then falls to his death. So you would think, how do they pick just this random character from one single issue? Well, Arcane came back. He actually came back in issue number 10.
Okay.
This time as a monster.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, at the end of issue number 10, he's killed. He then came back again and again. I think it was Alan Moore, when Alan Moore took over the comic in the 80s, but after this movie, because I think it was 84 that Alan Moore took over the comic. And Alan Moore kind of established the Swamp Thing that you pretty much see now.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of set up Arcane as the, you know, Swamp Thing's Lex Luthor, you know, Swamp Thing's Joker.
Yeah.
Arcane was now going to be Swamp Thing's main antagonist. What'd you think of Louis Jourdain and the character of Arcane?
I actually liked his character, and I thought
he was great.
Yeah. And you know, knowing that he, the following year,
too went good on, for this movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'm like, did you know what you signed up for when you got this script? But
a paycheck. That's what he signed up for.
But knowing that the year later he would be a Bond villain makes a lot of sense coming off of this. But I also did read that he was the only actor that came with notes for all of his dialogue. Every morning he would come to Wes Craven and say, I have some thoughts on my lines today. And he would basically try to rewrite his dialogue. So he knew what kind of character he wanted to portray, but he was definitely, you know, even though it was a sci-fi horror, I think it's more sci-fi than horror, he was approaching it like it was Shakespeare, which every great villain should do, especially in these movies. So for that reason, he elevates it. He elevates it a lot for me. I enjoyed him. I honestly wished he was on screen more. We got more of him in the movie.
Well, you know, he came back for the sequel.
Of course he did.
which you know, we'll talk about when we do the sequel in a couple of weeks, which anybody who's seen this movie would go, wait, what? Considering that he dies at the end of this. But you just heard me say the character in the comic died and then always came back. So,
but he was also a monster that, you know, at the end. So
yeah. So we'll save that story for the Return of Swamp Thing episode in a couple of weeks. That's really it in terms of characters that come from the comic. Although the characters of Ferret and Bruno, who were the two main henchmen, played by David Hess and Nicholas Wirth, those names are names of characters in the very first issue of Swamp Thing, and Swamp Thing number one. It's Maxwell Ferret and literally just Bruno. In the comics, these characters are kind of more like mob enforcers. The way the story goes in the comic is it's not Arcane who is trying to get a hold of their formula. It's this criminal organization known as the Conclave.
Okay.
And then Ferret and Bruno work for the Conclave. Although they are killed by Swamp Thing in the first issue.
Okay.
They're both murdered because Ferret kills Linda, which, you know, is Arcane kills Linda in the movie. Mm-hmm. Although, let's talk about Linda really quick.
Yeah.
Linda in the comic is Alec's wife.
Okay.
But in the movie, it's his sister.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course they did that because they wanted the love interest to be Alice Cable. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But when you know the comic book, that just felt so weird.
Yep, obviously.
What were your thoughts on Ferret and Bruno? Because those were totally two different type of henchmen.
Yeah, Bruno just felt so out of place, like, as the henchman. And I think because I've seen that actor in other 80s things, and he was not a henchman. He was more a comic.
Darkman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
In Darkman.
Darkman was 90s, though, I think, right?
Maybe.
I think it's 91. But anyway. But yeah, so I was waiting. I was expecting to be more like the comic. I mean, he's more comical to me. But I mean, they were what they were supposed to do. They were the henchmen. You know, I don't have much to say about them because they were pretty typical and they did their trope role very well. I would put it that way.
So unless I miss something, Ferret is the only character that Swamp Thing actually kills.
Okay.
Isn't that right?
That's probably,
I mean,
right.
Other than Arcane, obviously, at the end.
Yeah.
But I think Ferret is the only one that he straight up just murders.
Yeah, yeah. That was the most, that scene came up. I was like, yeah, PG movies have definitely changed a lot in the last 40 years. I mean, we've had this conversation before on either my podcast or yours. But yeah, that was definitely more in the horror realm than anything else in the movie.
Squeezing his head, blood pours out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, of course, Bruno gets the unfortunate fate of drinking the formula and then turning into a little pig person.
Right, right.
Yeah. Which they still use Nicholas Wirth's voice again. Yeah, mm-hmm. Kind of like they did for the Swamp Thing. And then that's where I'll get into a little bit of the story here. This is where some of the logic kind of falls apart for me. Because, you know, Arcane's trying to figure out why didn't he turn into, you know, this big hulking creature like Holland did. And Holland explains it away as the formula brings up your true self and amplifies it. And I'm just sitting there going, I thought it was made to grow plants. Like, where where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. It was the epiphany he had underwater as he was transforming in the swamp, and the explosions were going off above the water.
He goes, oh, I was in love with plants so much, I'm becoming a giant plant.
Yeah, sounds right. Yeah, that sounds about right.
There you go. And then Arcane, although thinks, well, I'm, you know, highly intelligent, so I will, it will just enhance my intelligence. But instead, we find out that he really was a big pile of crap.
Yeah.
Because that's what he turns into for a moment. That's the other, talking about logic again, because I've always said, even in a, you know, sci-fi movie, superhero movie, whatnot, your world has to have logic.
Right, right. No matter what
Arcane
that
world is. Arcane is the only one, we see Holland turn into Swamp Thing. We see Bruno turn into the little pig man.
Mm-hmm.
Arcane is the only one that gets a cocoon.
Cocoon, yeah, like a metamorphosis transformation.
Yeah, and that didn't make any sense. Like, why didn't that happen to the other ones?
It was weird.
Finally, we can't not talk about characters without talking about Jude.
Yeah.
Reggie Batts, who was, this is the one and only thing he ever did.
Yep.
He was just a local kid that they found and threw him into this role. And according to Wes Craven, the reason they went with a local kid, and I find this hard to believe, is that apparently it was a loophole in the child labor laws.
Yep.
So they didn't have to follow all of those guidelines because he was a local kid. So of course,
yeah, the
character's
thing,
not from the comics, made just for the movie. But what are your thoughts on Jude?
I liked him. He was great. I mean, he added, you know, all this weird stuff is going on. He added that everyday normal person's kind of perspective of, like, you know, I love it when,
who doesn't seem affected by any of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, hey, this happens all the time in South Carolina or Louisiana. So it doesn't make, you know, in our little town. But I love the part when I guess they're in the boats and then the bad guys, you know, the henchmen are coming. He's like, who the heck are those guys? And then the Swamp Thing comes, like, who the heck is that guy? So it's just like that whole little exchange was great. I was like, that's what you want. You want that person that we kind of see everything through his eyes. So, and of course he had to be that, even though he doesn't die, which I was glad, you know, but he gets attacked by the henchmen.
Well, let's
which
talk
then
about
then
that.
Spurs that thing
Did he die? Did he die?
Well, I thought he did until he came back at the end.
Yeah, but same thing happens with Cable.
True. Yeah. So yeah, if he died and then Swamp Thing heals him with his healing moss and his glowing green hand. So yeah, but that was a great moment when he's dying in the boat and Swamp Thing picks him up. Is his name like There Goes the Neighborhood or something?
Yeah. He wakes up, sees Swamp Thing, goes, There Goes the Neighborhood. Yeah.
So, which was fantastic. So yeah, I loved him. He's a great addition to the cast for sure.
I will say he's a better kid side character than the two we end up getting in the sequel. But again, sequel will come in a couple of weeks. So you've kind of already answered part of this question, but I'm going to ask you here.
Okay.
So of all the characters we had, who do you want to see again? And who do you wish would take the Gwen Stacy plunge?
Yeah, I definitely want to see Jude again, for sure.
Oh, really? See, I thought you were going to go with Arcane, because you're kind of talking about wanting to see more Arcane.
Yeah, but I mean, he's the villain, so, you know, you don't... Yeah, I would have liked him more in this movie. I don't think I need him as a recurring villain, though.
Okay.
So,
but you would have liked to seen Jude and more stories with the Swamp Thing?
Yeah.
All right, so who did you wish would just go away?
That's a tough one because there weren't any... Yeah, I don't know.
For me, it would be... Honestly, for me, it would be Cable. Like, I could do without Adrian Barbeau's character.
No, not for me. I think she was...
I could.
You've had this discussion with me already. I will say this. I would have preferred a different main henchman than...
Ferret?
Yeah. He was a little...
Sleazy?
Yeah. I mean, both of them were not great henchmen to me. They're not the...
Oh, no. All of the guards and whatnot are just so incompetent.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
They're horrible.
So
Arcane needs to hire better people.
Right.
And now these messages.
comic books have been around for almost a century, and in the last two decades, we've finally gotten to see many of these characters brought to life in movies and on TV. On the Moving Panels podcast, we discuss movies and TV shows based on, inspired by, and adapted from the world of comic books. Join me and my guests as we discuss both the good and the bad from Marvel, DC, and even some of the lesser-known comic book companies. Learn what is and isn't from the comics, as well as our nerdy review of the movie or show. New episodes drop every Monday, and you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. So join us for Moving Panels, and I'll see you on the other side of the page.
Now playing on a cell phone near you, a show for all the manly men out there, where guys talk about their favorite movies and what they can teach us about being a man, featuring the coolest guests.
Murder somebody is not like killing an ant.
The most gratifying laughs.
It's Tombstone, what can I say?
And a fresh take on movies like you've never heard before.
This will be the thing that gets written on his proverbial tombstone.
We aren't here to criticize the movies you love, but to praise them for how they apply to our lives as husbands, fathers, and really all men in general. So buckle up your seatbelts, because Manly Movies is here. Subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or your other favorite podcast catcher. And remember, man up.
What seems to be the problem, pal?
There's just so much pain in the world, so many issues. I don't think I can bear it.
Well, friendo, it sounds like you could use a dose of Pop Culture Roulette.
Pop Culture Roulette? What's that? Some sort of pop culture themed podcast or something?
That's right, sonny boy. When hope seems far, dive into some PCR.
But I already get my entertainment news from Variety.
Huh, that's pretty good. If you're a chucklehead, PCR gives you news you need. Condensed, unfiltered, and raw. From three nerds who know a little something about something.
Wow, okay. Sign me up.
That's the spirit. Pop Culture Roulette. New episodes every Monday, available on all major podcast directories.
All right, let's get into the moving panels, and I'm just going to start off by asking you a question. Before I get into it and kind of reveal some of this, what scenes, or just a scene, you don't have to name multiple, did you felt like they came straight from a comic book? And what scene did you feel like they had to have just made that up for the movie?
I felt like the creation of Swamp Thing, like how he came to be, felt comic book. Like that was pretty a typical comic book, you know. It's an accident. It's never on purpose, you know, him trying to get away with the serum or the formula, and then him being knocked over and it getting on him, and of course it being explosive and then catching him on fire and the whole thing. That seemed very much, if I had not read the comic, which I still haven't, I would say, oh, that's probably pretty close to how it was in the comic. The one that's not, and one of the scenes that I remembered as it was happening that I was like, ooh, I remember this as a kid, is Swamp Thing growing the new arm after touching the light. Okay. With his other hand. That just felt very much like a movie trope, more so than a comic book trope to me.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right, well, let's get into it. So you said his origin, and as I mentioned already, I was going to get into his origin. So at this point, when the movie came out, Swamp Thing had two origins. Okay. Now, technically, he would get three a couple of years later with Alan Moore. Mm-hmm. But so in House of Secrets number 92, which, again, like we talked about, was just a single issue, kind of a one shot, a self-contained story. He is not named Alec Holland. He's named Alex Olson.
Okay.
And it is set at the turn of the century. It's like, you know, 1890, 1900.
Right.
And what happens in that story is his best friend, Damian Ridge, is jealous of Alex and his love interest, his wife, Linda.
Right.
And so he actually sets up an explosion to go off and kill Alex. He then dumps Alex's body into the swamp and thus he becomes Swamp Thing.
Gotcha.
in that story, Damien actually marries Linda. However, his guilt about killing Alex eventually gets the best of him, and he begins to worry that Linda's going to find out. And so he starts to plan to murder Linda. And okay. then that's when Olsen returns as the Swamp Thing, and he stops Damien from murdering Linda.
Mm-hmm.
Linda then looks at him in horror, and Olsen returns to the swamp, you know, realizing though he'll always be alone, you know, Linda will be able to live out her life. And that's kind of how they kind of end the story. And like I said earlier, that issue, that single issue, was the best-selling DC comic that month. Like, it beat out Superman comics, beat out Batman comics. That right there. So, of course, they make a Swamp Thing series, and that's where we get the second one, which is the one that's closer to the movie. So, in Swamp Thing number one, we have the whole thing about the Hollins, both Alec and Linda, a husband and wife team. They're working on a secret government experiment. They are creating a bio-restorative formula to help with the food shortage of the world. And as I mentioned earlier, there's an organization called the Conclave that wants the formula, so they send thugs to retrieve it by any means. Alec and Linda, of course, refuse. So they attack Alec. They plant a bomb in the lab. And when Alec comes to, he's knocked out in the lab. When he comes to, it's too late. He can't get out in time. The bomb explodes. And just like we see in the movie, a burning Alec,
mm-hmm.
who's covered in the chemicals and, of course, the fire, jumps into the swamp, and that is where he becomes Swamp Thing. I will point out that the character of Swamp Thing is very similar, but the one thing that I am not familiar with in terms of the comic character is his that healing ability that we talked about with Jude,
yeah.
like bringing Jude yeah. back and that much of it. However, he is able to heal himself.
Okay.
And so your little thing about his arm, guess what? It's in the comic book. Yeah, Swamp Thing number 5. I said earlier that Swamp Thing number 5 was the one with Batman. It was yep. not.
Oh, okay.
So Swamp Thing number 5, which was in August of 1973. Again, it was kind of a creature feature, the Swamp Thing stories. It was like, you know, okay, now he's going to face this. Like, one point he faces a Scottish werewolf. Another point, he faces like a Frankenstein monster type creature. In this issue, there's a woman and a little boy that is running from a mob who thinks that she is a witch.
Hmm.
And so you kind of get this like Salem witch hunt type thing going. And in one of the battles, one of the members of the mob actually cuts Swamp Thing's arm off.
Mm-hmm.
And Swamp Thing ends up falling into the water, and when he comes out of the water, he starts to notice that his arm is growing back.
Okay.
And then when his arm does grow back, he says, and when I say he says, Swamp Thing doesn't actually talk in the comics, not for quite a while. I don't know the exact issue when he starts being able to speak, but we get all of his thoughts. And when his arm grows back, he talks about now he feels stronger. I liked the scene that you were talking about where he kind of reaches for the sun
mm-hmm.
and then it starts to grow. I thought it was a pretty good little effect.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I
liked the scene, which is why I camera started, I was like, oh, I remember this as a kid. Like, that was so cool to see as a kid. Like, I remember the little twig hand, you know, making a fist.
Yeah, yeah. Although now that we've had more recent recent movies, it reminded me a lot of Deadpool. When Deadpool gets his limbs cut off and we see his little baby hand.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of reminded me of that.
It made me think of Groot.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, definitely a Groot feel as well. The only other comic connection that I found was one I already mentioned in Swamp Thing number 2. We got Arcane, who was doing experiments on people and called him his Unmen. We get to see that play out a little bit more in the sequel.
Okay.
But that was really it. The Swamp Thing comic, I'm pretty sure by the time this movie was being made, the Swamp Thing comic had kind of ended its run.
Okay.
And then wouldn't get picked back up until Alan Moore took it over in 84. And the great series of the saga Swamp Thing,
mm-hmm.
That he wrote. Are you familiar with Alan Moore?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you know anything, I would say if you know anything about comics, you got to know the name Alan Moore.
Yes, definitely.
And for anybody listening, I don't know why you're listening to a comic movie podcast and you don't know comics, but if you don't know who Alan Moore is, let me just say two other titles he did. Watchmen and V for Vendetta.
Yep.
There you go. That's Alan Moore. Alan Moore brought Swamp Thing back. DC, kind of like I talked about earlier, about them just giving the producer the character for free. DC pretty much told Alan Moore, hey, we're going to give you Swamp Thing. Do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he did. It was actually, to my knowledge, his run on Swamp Thing, the first issue he put out of Swamp Thing, was the first comic to not receive the comic code stamp.
Okay.
Because he was making a comic for adults.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
And so his run of Swamp Thing gets a lot darker, goes a lot deeper into the mythos. We're not going to get into all of that. Probably actually talk about that a little bit more when we talk about the television shows later this month. Because the 2019 television series actually follows Alan Moore's story more than it does Len Wein's. So there you go. But that's really all the comic book connections. The only thing I still want to talk about, as we mentioned earlier, is I want to talk about the alternate edit, the alternate cut, the mm-hmm. international cut,
international
as
cut.
Some people refer to it. So there is another cut of this movie, in which there is a good maybe 3 minutes of watching Adrian Barbeau take a bath in the swamp.
Which is already weird.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's so much. But it is not as weird as the other scene that was added for this cut, which happens right before Arcane's dinner party. You know, when Bruno is turned into the creature.
Right.
The cut that you see in the DVD, the Blu-ray that people have now, it starts right as they show the table. But that scene actually went to that other room that was off to the side, started off in that room where there was just a bunch of random women just topless and making out with dudes. And you want to talk about a random scene.
clearly
just nudity for the sake of nudity.
Mm-hmm.
So from what I gathered is the reason why those scenes were added was because countries like Germany and a couple of others, they wanted to market it as a rated R horror movie.
Okay.
And so I guess instead of adding more violence and more mm-hmm. gore, they went, okay, nudity, that'll make it rated R.
Right.
Because in America, it's rated PG.
Yep.
It's a PG movie. You know, PG-13 hadn't come out yet. It's a PG movie. So that's the way it was released. Is there was the American edit, and then there was this, like, international edit
mm-hmm.
With the nudity. The thing was that when the DVD was released in 2000,
mm-hmm.
so this is 18 years after the movie came out, they released the DVD in 2000. You had one job and
get the right cut of the movie for the right country.
And they apparently put the international edit on the American DVD. And the story goes is that a woman, and I think maybe she lived in Canada. I don't remember where she lived, but a woman, rented Swamp Thing from a Blockbuster
mm-hmm.
in May of 2002. So that means this edit DVD had been out for 2 years.
Right, right.
She rented it from a Blockbuster in May of 2002 for her son and her sons or son and a friend. I know there was more than one kid involved. And she's sitting there. She sits there with him and watches it at the beginning to make sure that it's, you know, good. She is satisfied. She walks away. And then a few minutes later, I don't remember the story if whether one of her sons said something or she just walks back in and there is a topless Adrienne Barbeau mm-hmm. just on the screen, just bathing herself. And so the woman reported it. They, of course, immediately, Blockbuster immediately removed them from the shelves.
Right.
MGM, who made the film. We didn't even talk about that. It's so weird that this is an MGM film, considering DC is owned by Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I really wanted to know, I meant to look this up, like how many DC movies exist that were not made by Warner Brothers. So I found that interesting. But, and you could probably speak more on this since you watched the interview with Adrienne Barbeau. Mm-hmm. MGM, apparently, instead of trying to change anything, they just reached out to her and say, hey, you good with this? And of course she went, no.
Right.
Because it was, you mentioned her contract. It was actually in her contract that the nudity could only be seen in
those countries.
Yeah, gotcha. That got that cut. And mm-hmm. so if they had decided to go forward, if Adrienne Barbeau decided to pursue it, you know, she pretty much had the law on her side. And I've heard that if you have the 2000 DVD release, that it's apparently a pretty penny.
I'm sure. Yeah.
A collector issue. However, I will say I discovered something in doing my research. So I let Tim borrow my copy of Swamp mm-hmm. Thing so he could watch it.
Right.
I found out the Swamp Thing was on Tubi. And so since Tim had my copy, I decided to watch it on Tubi right before, you know, we recorded it and all. And guess what?
That's the international.
Tubi has the international cut.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that kind of surprised me. Very curious
I'm sure it did.
How that happens. What were your thoughts on the movie, on the story altogether? Anything else you wanna hit in terms of the movie, the story as a whole?
Well, just based on that, I thought, because I, you know, of course I read that story as well, and doing my research before I was watching it, and then watching the movie, like I said, the death, the one scene or the one person that Swamp Thing murders, and even somewhat of the transformation of Arcane at the end, I'm like, that's acceptable in PG, but, you know, not that I'm a proponent of, or not that I'm condoning nudity in PG movies, but I just think that's an interesting, you know, it's okay for this to be.
Well, and we still get side boob.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In the PG the version. American edit. And there were, and I remember, okay, I'm going to take a little detour, but I remember sitting in a movie theater, one of the first movies I ever saw with my mom, and watching Clash of the Titans, which has a breastfeeding scene. And that was my first time seeing, you know, that on screen. And I remember turning to my mom and saying, oh, my gosh, why is this in a movie that I'm allowed to watch? And she said, oh, well, that's something that's natural. Now, that's Clash of the Titans. It's a whole different, you know, thing. But that was my upbringing as well. So,
because wasn't there also like some claymation nudity?
There was
in that as well.
Yep, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I can't remember, like, wasn't Medusa topless or?
No, I don't remember if it was Medusa.
There's a claymation character.
Yeah, there is a claymation character that is. So once again, but there, I mean, I don't know the list, but I know I've seen lists in the past of, you know, pre PG-13, which even the early PG-13 movies were still allowed to get away with like brief shots of nudity and stuff. So, My whole thought is like, it's the violence is okay, but the nudity is not. And so not that I'm saying that one is better or worse than the other. I just thought that was interesting that this mom letting her kids watch a quote unquote PG movie is fine with this guy getting his head smashed in or this creature coming out is, you know, that's not as offensive as a woman bathing in a swamp, which still, once again, was, which I think even Craven had said he felt was gratuitous and didn't like it that it was in the film. So he was glad that it was taken out of the American edit.
I'm sure. I mean, that's not something you really associate with Craven.
Yeah. 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 But back to your original question, I enjoyed it. I think it's a typical quote unquote, origin story, comic book story, which there's not that there's anything wrong with that, But it checks all those boxes of what you want to see in an origin story.
So if you didn't know it was a comic book movie, mm-hmm. would you have guessed it was a comic book movie?
Probably not. Just because like more contemporary comic book movies tend to somewhat want to look like comic book or have certain frames and or that look like panel.
Well, but they used the dissolves. They had the dissolves.
They did. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That's true.
The ones that kind of drip down, mm-hmm. and then the like explosion,
right?
Looking
little filters,
yeah, filters and all. So it did have that in it, yeah. but no, I'm with you. I think that if you didn't know this was a comic book movie, you wouldn't. You would again. You would probably just think it was a monster movie.
Yeah, yeah. It when it, pulling it up, it's classified under like horror first, and then sci-fi. And I'm kind of like you. I would consider it more like a creature feature, like more like the Creature from the Black Lagoon or something like those kind of old, you know, monster movies that weren't necessarily horror, but just, you know, and not really sci. It has some sci-fi elements, but it's really more that kind of, yeah, creature feature kind of feel for me.
What were your thoughts on the whole? I mean, we've hit this a little bit, but kind of going more depth. What were your whole thoughts on the Beauty and the Beast love story that they were clearly trying to establish?
Well, you know, they have that moment before he transforms. So it's not totally Beauty and the Beast for me because it's a person that she did love or obviously had feelings for. They had some kind of feelings. It's kind of rushed there before that happens.
They had known each other for a minute and a half.
Right, right. yeah. But then it's her kind of seeing past the monster that he's become and see the person that she knew, you know, for 15 minutes before he became the creature. I say in jest. Yeah, it's somewhat like it, but it's not for me.
Okay. Well, I think that brings us to our final decision. Bag it, stack it, or trade it. So now with all this being said, what do you say, Tim? How would you treat this as if it was a comic book?
I was ready because I was thinking about this as I was watching the movie. This is a definite stack it. Okay. It's not, I mean, it's not terrible. It's not the best, you know, comic book movie I've seen. I mean, we talked about budget, obviously had its issues. Oh, and I was going to, we were talking about, you know, scenes that were taken out due to budget when Swamp Thing and Cable are jumping into
the random
pool thing.
pool that's in Arcane's
that's supposed
house.
To bring them back into the swamp. There was supposed to be a long kind of chase sequence in underground underwater tunnels that Craven really wanted to do, but his budget got cut and he had to take it out. So when that scene came up, I was like, oh, that would have been a really cool to have, you know, they wanted more action scenes, but they didn't want to pay for that one.
Would you have not thought that would have also kind of just settled in more of the similarity to Creature of the Black Lagoon?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, there's that famous scene out of that movie where the woman's swimming and he's swimming up under her.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see Adrian Barbeau and Swamp Thing swimming through water, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of seems like it would be the same.
Yeah.
And then was Arcane's wolf, werewolf, pig, whatever he was.
His costume was
horrible. Was he supposed to be swimming after them? Because that had to have looked horrible, considering he's all fur.
Yeah, it definitely would have weighed him down. And I didn't understand the whole sword, like why the sword was so important.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
Why does he need a sword?
Yeah. So yeah, but going back to your original question, it's a stack it. It's one that I would go back and watch. I'll probably go back and watch. Maybe not every year, but every so often, it would be fun to go back and watch. But it's not one that I would want to frame and have, you know, hey, everybody, come watch this with me.
I think for me, I was leaning towards Stack It, but I think for the sheer thought that this is one of the original comic book movies, I have to go bag it. I mean, you're looking at, if you count the 66 Batman movie, which was really just a longer version of the television show.
Right, right.
If you count that, this was only the third DC feature film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Now, if you say that doesn't start till Superman, then this is technically the second. Well, I'm not counting not counting Superman 2, which would have come out right before this.
Right.
But in terms of bringing a character to the big screen, Swamp Thing was one of the originals. And so it's a classic. I think the movie does a good job of staying true to the comic. So we mentioned earlier about Wes Craven saying he thought he did a good job of keeping true to the story and the theme, the overall theme of the comic. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think he did. Does it look cheap? Does it look campy? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. But as we keep talking about comparing it to Creature from the Black Lagoon, so does that. And it's considered a classic.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of those old horror movies and those B movies of the 50s.
Yeah.
I'm on edge about the Beauty and the Beast kind of story and having that love interest there. I don't know how I feel there. That's where I kind of lean more towards the stack it. But then, as we mentioned, Louis Jourdain as Arcane,
mm-hmm.
great villain.
Yep. Yep.
And so that also pulls me back. So although it's a very weak Baggett, mm-hmm. I would bag it. Yeah. So that's where we stand.
And I will say my favorite Arcane scene is when he removes his face disguise, which
that
was really good.
An awesome effect.
Yeah. I was like, oh no, they're going to do the Mission Impossible thing, you know?
Like, but the actor who he's disguised as, like,
right.
You see him pull something.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And of course then they do the edit to reveal it, but that initial pull,
yeah, was very good.
Like, how did they do that?
Gotta love the practical effects.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of practical effects.
I hope that you enjoyed this special replay of the Moving Panels episode about Swamp Thing. As you can see, Laramie is well versed in comic books and an avid 80s flicks fan as well. So if you enjoyed our discussion about Swamp Thing, then you should go check out his other great episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting platform. He's covered some great comic book movies and TV shows like Richard Donner's Superman, Tim Burton's Batman, and one of my all-time favorite 80s TV shows, The Greatest American Hero. Give those episodes a listen. Well, that's all we got for this episode. If you love the 80s Flick Flashback podcast, then please leave us a stellar written review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to follow or subscribe, and be sure to tell your 80s Flick loving friends and family all about us. You can also find us on our social media pages like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Hey, you can also support the show through buymeacoffee.com for as little as $5 a month. And be sure to visit our online store to order our t-shirts, sweatshirts, and other cool 80s Flick Flashback merch. Well, thanks again for listening. I'm Tim Williams for the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. Good night, good people.
What's up, dudes? I'm Jerry D of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, books, fashion, and fads.
If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, he's got it covered. Wait, is there a lot of things to talk about for the 80s and Christmas?
Well, you got the movie giants like Christmas Vacation, Scrooged, and A Christmas Story. There are TV specials like Muppet Family Christmas, Claymation Christmas Celebration, and a Garfield Christmas special.
Plus classics shown every year.
You also jam out to Last Christmas, Do They Know It's Christmas, and Christmas in Hollis. But most of all, it was a time for the most bodacious, best-selling Christmas toys ever, like He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers...
And Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes, them too. We cover them all, plus much more, including standard segments like Hap Hap Happiest Memory, Gagging with the Spoon, The Other Half of the Battle...
And Chant with the Littles.
So tune in to Totally Rad Christmas everywhere you get your podcasts. Turn the clock back and dive into those warm and fuzzy memories.
Later, dudes.
Hey, everybody. Do you ever just sit around with your friends and reminisce about the days and how things used to be when you were a kid or a teenager or maybe even a young adult? The TV shows and the movies that you watched at the time and how things just aren't quite the same today? Well, let me tell you, I've got the place for you. My name is Chris Adams, and I'm the host of the podcast Retro Life for You. And here at Retro Life for You, we talk about and discuss movies and TV that is retro. And we are going back from the 80s and the 90s and into the 2000s. Hey, sometimes we might even touch back to the 70s if we're feeling good. If this is for you, make sure you look for us on everywhere that you can find your podcast at. Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Google, Stitcher. We're hosted on Anchor FM. And make sure you follow us on all the major networks and leave us a rating and a review. It really does help. Look forward to hearing from you.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.